All right, I'd like to call to order the Finance Committee meeting for January 7, 2025. It is currently 10:03 a.m. I'm Director Steve Booth. I'll be leading the discussion today. Also present committee member, Director John Merchant. Also present is our Director of Finance and Administration, Mark Matalich, and our District Secretary, Amelia Wilder. Next item on the agenda, John, do you have any changes to the agenda you'd like to propose, or shall we proceed with that, the agenda as, okay? So item number two is an information item, Mark, the financial reports, budget to actuals.
Great, thank you very much. Amelia, would you just pull that up on the screen?
There you go.
That's good.
Okay, so just same thing that we do each month. I do want to note this is the financials through November 30th, and that's mainly just a timing thing. There were two business days between the end of December and when we had to have this meeting posted. So we expect the December financials to be presented at the board on the 15th.
Okay.
And so, you know, I'll run through this and field any questions. That top darker blue section, that's the results from operations. And again, this is taking the 24-25 budget, just a pro rata share of that, 5 out of 12 months, and comparing it to the actual results through November 30th. And through November 30th, the district as a whole had a $394,000 surplus. That's revenues coming in over operating expenses, which is, you know, good news for the district. One thing I will note, and I've noted this the last couple of months, a lot of this is coming from the water fund, and a lot of that excess revenue over budget is due to seasonality. We had some hot months, and I think we had a bit of an Indian summer this year. So as we go forward into the more rainy, cooler months, you'll see that start to level out. We go into non-operating, and again, this is property tax, which is just straight-lined based on the budget. $925,000 was budgeted for this year. And I believe maybe by the 15th, we'll have received that first payment. The district, and I mentioned this before, is on what's called the teeter plan. And so the county sends the property tax proceeds over 3 times a year. In December, there's a payment that's due, which is typically received sometime in January, and that's 45%. Of what's expected for the year. So as soon as we get that first payment, we'll divide it by 45% and come up with a new estimate, okay? And so maybe that'll be updated by the January board meeting, definitely by the February board meeting when we report January results. And then interest and investment earnings, part of that is allocated to non-operating, and part of that is allocated to operating. And we'll talk about this a little bit later. There's a table, and actually I have the table here presented as of 12/31 because we do have that information. It was easy to put together. And through December 31st, 2024, the first 6 months of the year, the district had interest and investment earnings of $394,000, which is, you know, better than I think the last several years. So that's really good and very helpful to operations and augmenting reserves. And then here, this red kind of pinkish section, this is really, you know, the restricted money, which is the reserve fee, the capital replacement reserve fees, which are the $14 a month that everybody sees in their water and a wastewater portion of their bill. We've discussed this in the past. That's board discretionary, but we put it down here in the restricted section. Then there's the debt reserve fee. That's basically the district's water fund paying back the sewer fund. And that's that $6 fee everybody sees on their bill. Right. And then the three items after that, water augmentation, capital improvements, that appears in water, wastewater, and security, and then security impact fees. Those are what are known as the connection fees, and those are the truly restricted funds that the district brings in. And so we've got that there, and I think we talked about that already. There were several connections early in this fiscal year. My understanding is we're not expecting that many more for the remaining of this particular fiscal year, but that's what those results are showing. And then down in this green section, those are the capital expenditures, and that's primarily the CIP projects, and we've got the Granley's project is the bulk of what you're seeing in there. And then there've been I think some work on the design of that conversion project from the chlorine gas over to the bleach. And so that's the overview of the financial report as of December 30.
Okay. So this would be where?
I'm sorry, sir.
6 months?
This will be 5 months. This one's through November 30, yeah.
Okay.
And in a couple of weeks, I believe we'll have the December 31 up there for the board meeting, December 31st.
Cool. Mark, the $28,000 in security connection fees, the impact fees, my understanding is that has to be used for capital improvements or facility equipment. Do we have currently in the current year's budget proposal for the use of that money, or was that something that we will consider in the next budget cycle, how to use that $28,000 if or whatever we end up with?
So my understanding of the security impact fee is that it's, and you're absolutely right, it's for capital, but I believe it's supposed to be for the camera surveillance network, surveillance camera network in the community. And there is no CIP project for that, but we did just do a refresh of how the monitor system is set up in the two guardhouses, the two gatehouses, to make it more effective. And we did add a security camera with a license plate camera on it. So if a vehicle goes through, it'll capture a photo of the license plate coming in or out at Clementia, right where the paved road goes into the gravel or dirt road.
Mm-hmm.
And the beauty of that is we've got that camera. RMA has a similar camera at the Calero Reservoir going back into the backcountry area. I believe those are the two choke points where you can drive a vehicle into the backcountry.
Yeah.
And so what that's going to do is that's going to help our security department be able to monitor any kind of vehicle traffic going in and out of there. And it will make it so we don't have to necessarily send our patrol folks, which there's one, right, like way out into the backwoods, unless at the gatehouses where they're monitoring, they see something. One thing that we're working on also is adding some kind of a motion sensor where if maybe a bunch of people are riding bikes through there or walking through there and having something chime in the gatehouse to get the gate officer's attention if somebody goes through there, only at certain times, right? Like maybe after the time you're not supposed to be back there, or maybe even a little bit later at night when it would be really no reason to be back there unless you're going to do
They're back there at night starting bonfires.
Right. And so the thought is if we could get a chime, then that will notify the gate officer to look up and look at the monitor. They see what's happening. Then they can dispatch, call out to the patrol officer, and the patrol officer can go back there and take care of whatever they need to take care of.
Okay.
But you're absolutely right. That's what those funds are supposed to be used for.
Director Merchant, you have any additional questions or comments on that?
Nope, I do not.
Do we have any public comment on this item?
No, sir, we do not.
All right, then we'll move on to the next item, item three, which is GSRMA insurance coverage. I think maybe I want to kick this one off. I learned a week or so ago that last summer staff decision was made to notify Golden State Risk Management Association that we no longer wished to have property coverage under our insurance plans with that pool. I've seen some communications of late recounting kind of a history of that issue. There is a memorandum included in this packet which addresses that issue. My understanding basically, and I don't recall this specifically, but have a very vague recollection, that staff brought to the attention of the board early last year concerns about the significant increases in premium costs with GSRMA. And at that time, it was represented that GSRMA was not providing us with coverage for fire, flood, or earthquake. Board instruction was to do some research and come back with some options. To my recollection, and based on what I've read over the last week or so, that item was never brought back to the board, but a staff decision was made to notify GSRMA that we no longer wish to have our property covered. The memorandum in the packet dated today reiterates that representation that GSRMA coverage does not include fire, flood, or earthquake. In verbal conversation and in email exchange with the CAO of GSRMA last week, I was advised that that is a false narrative, that in fact we do have both fire and flood coverage. The deductible for flood is a bit higher than the standard deductible for other coverages, and that earthquake is available to us for a separate premium, much like some of us may choose to take it out on our residences. I'm concerned that there is some miscommunication about the coverage. Again, I have an email specifically iterating that we do have both fire and flood coverage. While I would encourage, and in fact, CAO, Mr. Rick, Kropelkick, I think, did offer to have us meet with, their risk management folks and perhaps come up with a strategy for risk avoidance and long-term potential reduction in premiums. I indicated I thought we would probably want to do that, over the next 30 to 60 days, and we would take him up on that offer. But my inclination is to direct staff or have the board next week direct staff to pay the remaining portion of this premium, reinstate our property coverage, and have any discussions about modifications to our insurance coverage in the context of our budget discussions and after we've had an opportunity to meet with the GSRMA representatives. Director Merchant, I know you were included on the email exchange last week. You weren't on the phone conversation that I had with the CAO and our general counsel, Mr. Enright, but you have any additional thoughts on how we should proceed on this?
Only that the question I asked was, we're in the pool for both liability and for, fire and flood and personal property coverage, which in my opinion to them is kind of the low-hanging fruit, in terms of return, where in view of the fact that we have had significant liability activity over the past few years, it was maybe unwise to split our coverage. This came at a time as well where we were actually being put on the GSRMA Board of Directors agenda for their upcoming meeting on the 8th. I didn't really see that as a wise move at this time. At the time I was actually reading that and communicating back that, you know, I wasn't in favor of splitting that coverage, was the only time I became aware, really, that we hadn't paid the premium, which, in my opinion, is something that needs to happen, like, immediately.
So in the conversation I had with the CAO, being aware that they were essentially preparing to cancel our coverage at the meeting tomorrow, I indicated that this committee was meeting today, that I was hopeful that the committee would recommend to the board that we pay the premium and keep the coverage intact, at least for the remainder of this fiscal year. And he assured me that if we take that action as a committee today and I notify their staff this afternoon, that they'll buy us some time and give us a chance to have it discussed at the board next week. And so that would be my inclination to proceed in that manner. Mark, is there anything that you'd like to add or address on this issue?
No. If that's what the board's decision is, we can have a check cut. We can do an off-cycle check today. We can do one on Thursday when our normal check run.
Mark, were you present at any time when GSRMA reps told staff that we didn't have fire and flood coverage?
I wasn't really spearheading this specific effort. I have been on calls with GSRMA where the reasons for looking at possibly going elsewhere for property coverage or self-insuring was brought up. And I never got the impression from GSRMA that they pushed back on the notion that they were, in fact, actually covering fire, flood, and earthquake. That was always the premise that was brought up about dropping that coverage and self-insuring or going somewhere else for that specific part of the policy. I've been on a call with somebody from GSRMA that I thought was pretty high up. I don't have their name handy, but where that individual never indicated they were going to drop the coverage and even seemed to think or suggest that it's not uncommon for special districts to self-insure for property insurance. So that's my experience, but like I said, this was not a specific project that I was spearheading or, you know, running or working on myself, but I had been in some calls just so I could have context going forward.
Yeah. Can you, one of the things that maybe for the meeting next week you could look into for me is, first of all, when I first saw that and I didn't have the verbal communication with GSRMA, I looked at that and I said, well, if we're not insured for fire, then what are we insured for? I mean, what's going to happen to us that could be worse than a fire? In view of, I guess what I'd be asking is there are two principal resources I think that we have that are our vulnerability. One is a $14.5 million water plan, and the other is this building, which when we built it was, you know, about $550,000, as I recall. I don't know, maybe it's worth $1 million now, $1.5 million, I have no idea. But what does that mean? You know, plus all the trucks, equipment, and backhoes, and all that other stuff. You know, what does that mean? I'm not adverse to self-assuring insuring either, but like Steve said, I'd be more comfortable in making that break at the end of a fiscal year before we make the payment for the following fiscal year. It just sounded to me like the perfect storm, you know, in view of our liability issues and the fact that we were willing to pull that out at that point in time and we hadn't paid the premium.
So
three things that kind of concern me, you know. That,
yeah. No, so I will say that the understanding was that they were not covering fire, flood, and earthquake in that property coverage, which, to your point, that's what would happen to our property here, right?
Right.
And the premium had dramatically gone up, so this was an opportunity to look at this $150,000 part of the premium. And this was done at the beginning or near the beginning of the fiscal year before we paid the bill. So I think the invoice is included in the packet. And when we paid the invoice, I put a spreadsheet together, you know, taking that part of it out and making some notes regarding that. And so my understanding of this was this premium has gone up dramatically. On all fronts, we're looking to save money here at the district and stretch the community's dollar as far as possible. And it might be a more prudent use of funds to either take that $150,000 per year, or even if it escalates more in the next 3 to 4 years, 5 years, and bank that in like a self-insurance fund, which I don't think is uncommon for special districts to do, or go outside. And I believe the efforts to go outside and find another insurer were not fruitful, because I think an insurance company wants the full
right.
book of business,
right.
not just a piece. So it was done before we paid the invoice. Like you said, I do agree with you. I think that's the opportune time to do it. So that's just my 2 cents, but just let me know when you would like us to cut the check. If you want it this Thursday, we can do it in this Thursday's check run.
Well, I think it's this is a matter that I think should have come back to the board previously, and so I think the board needs to make a decision on that on Wednesday. But if they follow the recommendation that this committee is making, then I think it would behoove us. What I'm hearing from Mr. Kropelka is he thinks the outstanding amount is about $127,000. He was going to verify that. There was a higher amount discussed, and I guess there were some adjustments made. Is Ryan Brannon maybe the person that you spoke with last summer?
No, Ryan, I believe, is somebody that was contacted early on when we saw the bill go up so much, and he actually did a reevaluation based on the initial inquiries into why the bill was so high compared to the prior year, and he knocked it down some. So that might be the small difference there between the two numbers.
Yeah.
But they did come back a second time and reduce the amount of the bill.
Well, and so specifically, and I'm reading from the email that Director Merchant and Council Enright and I received from Mr. Kropelka last week. He writes, all risks includes fire. The district does have flood insurance, though with a higher deductible than the standard $1,000 for other losses. The district is not covered for earthquake due to its location. Such coverage could be added, but for an additional charge that can be pricey in most parts of California. So this is from the CAO of GSRMA. It's unequivocal as I read it. So it's unfortunate that there was apparently some misunderstanding or miscommunication earlier in the year. But so we will go forward. Amelia will make sure we have an action item for the board next Wednesday to approve continuing and paying. It's kind of academic, but our coverage would go back retroactively to June or to July 1st. Apparently we've had no claims, otherwise they'd be talking to us about that, but that will cover us through the remainder of this fiscal year, and then we can have the discussions that we've talked about. All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
I do have a public comment on this if you're prepared to take it.
This would be a good time for public comment on this. Thank
Mr.
you.
Mr. Gears?
This is a bit off the subject, but I think it's important. I read this memo from the general manager, and she reports about what happened following the meeting at GSRMA. General manager raised the issue within the board in closed session in January, February, and goes on and on. He talks about getting directions from the board in closed session. I'm kind of curious why this was handled in closed session. I mean, right now I cannot come up with a reason it would be. And I'm kind of interested in what subject, what item on the agenda in closed session was covered in, because To me, that certainly sounds like a violation of the Brown Act.
Yeah.
Maybe it's something I don't understand.
Well, and I, at this time, and it's unfortunate we can't even nail it down to whether it was January or February. I don't recall at this point in time, Mr. Gears. I know that on more than one occasion, the general manager reported to the board in the context of our continuing evaluation of her activity and performance on various initiatives that she was presenting and working on. It may have come up in that context. Hey, here's a heads up. You know, I'm looking into, you know, insurance costs and trying to save you money. I can't say with any great confidence that that was the context, but I will tell you that we do try, and I in particular am especially sensitive to the restrictions of the Brown Act, but I'm afraid I don't have a direct answer for your question, but I do agree that any discussion by the board about whether or not to modify our property or other insurance belongs in open session, and that's why we're bringing it forward on Wednesday.
Yeah. I tried to come up with a rationalization of how it happened. That's one thing I came up with, and I see all these closed session evaluations of the general manager, and I don't know what that is, but this certainly isn't an evaluation. This is...
It may have come up in that context with the board asking what she was working on, what initiatives, you know, she saw forthcoming in terms of us evaluating, you know, her activity on behalf of the district. But again, that at this late date, that's really speculative on my part. But I know that we've had other discussions similar to that.
And that's
why I think that may have been the context.
Yeah. I'm still concerned about it, and I think you ought to consult with Mr. Enright, because to me that's a clear violation.
Consult
of the
what?
With, pardon me?
Consult who? With whom?
Mr. Enright.
Oh.
The counselor.
Mr. Enright wasn't on our staff at that time.
Yeah.
Mr. Ramos was, and I will tell you, Mr. Ramos was a gatekeeper when it came to Brown Act. So
would he have been in those closed session meetings?
Counsel's always in our closed session meetings, yes.
Yeah. Okay,
yes.
But I am very concerned about that.
Appreciate your comments.
Thank you.
Any other public comment?
No, sir.
Anything further from staff or Mr. Merchant?
No.
Yep. Okay. The next item four, is IT vendor cost comparison for fiscal year 23-24 and fiscal year 24-25. This item is on this agenda at my request. I actually asked to have this put on the board agenda for December. And I was told that the information that I had requested wasn't available. There is a memorandum in this packet, staff memorandum. I'm trying to scroll down the computer to get to it. It passed all the GSRMA coverages. If memory serves, in late 2023, I want to say November or December 2023, our board approved a part-time IT professional to be employed. It was proposed as a half-time position to provide on-site access to staff with IT issues. We were experiencing delays in our vendors having vendor responses when pretty prompt requests were made. And a few months later, before that position was filled, although after interviews were held, if I recall correctly, the board was asked to approve a full-time IT professional. And a great deal of the discussion at that time revolved around the premise that by bringing an IT professional in-house full-time, we could eliminate our vendor contracts and the costs associated with those outside vendor contracts, and essentially the position would be would pay for itself or would be largely paid through those savings. We're 6 months post hiring the full-time IT manager. We had not received any specific information from staff about progress in that regard, so I asked for a comparative report, basically to see how are we doing. That request for information has been declined twice. The most recent declination said that it wouldn't be made available until the end of the fiscal year. I'm having a tough time as president of the board understanding why I can't get access to information of that nature. Mr. Matulich, I'm going to ask you to do whatever is necessary to get that information prepared for the board. I would love to have it by the 15th meeting, if at all possible, since I've asked for it now for two consecutive months. But I want to see, you know, what are the metrics? Is this position, in fact, paying for itself? Have we, in fact, you know, saved money on vendor contracts as was projected? And if we have, great, then let's celebrate that. If we have not, then I think we need to have a discussion, again, perhaps in the context of budget preparation, about what we do with outside contracts in the next fiscal year and whether or not the board sees value in retaining a full-time IT person, if those costs are on top of, not in exchange for, vendor contracts. Director Merchant?
Just, Mark, when we get into the discussion about a new accounting system, I'd just like to understand, and, you know, not this very minute, the relationship of that to when we implement it, the relationship of that new system to the rest of the IT support. I'm assuming we get or pay for some type of, I'm looking for the right word, IT support from the new vendor, correct, on the software?
Yes, we're looking at doing a software as a service contract for the new accounting software package.
Okay.
So that will be housed remotely with the accounting software provider.
Okay, and then the only other half of that equation would be issues we would have with existing hardware or servers or anything else that drive the system. Is this built in and standalone in a PC or in a laptop?
Are you talking about the accounting software?
The accounting software, yeah.
No, it would be something that we would sign into through the cloud.
Okay.
Hosted by the vendor's equipment. Mm-hmm. I will say that there are a lot of, the district has a pretty large IT infrastructure, anywhere from, you know, backup power supply to software that is relied on to operate the water plant and the wastewater plant, and just, you know, the overall hardware picture in-house, the software in-house. So I will tell you, when I started here on October 31st, so basically November 23, it was very difficult to get IT service because we had a vendor that was coming out once every 2 weeks to address issues on site. And I mean, it is an example. It took a year for me to be able to print from my computer off of the main printer here. My computer kept telling me that printer was out of paper, and I would physically walk to that printer and look, and it would be full of paper. And nobody could tell me why. The IT guy that was showing up every other week couldn't figure it out. He tried to work on it four different times. If I had an IT issue, I mean, the process was put in a ticket via email And then that would go in a queue for this individual. And then whatever he could get to in the 4 or 5 hours he spent here, he would get to. And then if he couldn't get to something, you would wait 2 weeks. Sometimes they could do things remotely, but it would be put a ticket in, and then just randomly at some point in the next couple of days, you would get a phone call. And then at that time, you have to literally drop everything you're doing and be prepared to, like, have your computer rebooted or taken over for a fix. So it was a difficult environment to operate in. The two big examples I can give you, every day at noon, and now the current accounting software we have is actually loaded on a server here, so it's a little bit different than the new one, but every day at noon, that piece of software would crash. And, you know, I asked our accountant here, I said, what? Yeah, after like a week or so, I'm like, what is going on? Did your computer crash?
You're talking about Great Plains?
Yeah. Okay. And he said, oh, yeah, it's just always like that. And it's, you know, I mean, I think you both know, like, that's unacceptable.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right? So, you know, we called and whatever, and we eventually got it figured out. And then there was another thing. Once a week, the way that the generators would cycle out at the water plant, and I think this was like a weekly test or something, it would make the entire network go offline, and that would impact the gates. The gates would have to be reset because they would go offline, right? And so that's something that, you know, this third-party vendor that we were using just was not equipped to deal with. Right. And so that is something that our in-house IT person, Andy, has been able to fix and resolve. And so I will say, just completely objectively, like, you know, beyond just laying out dollars to dollars, I mean, I don't think the district was getting good value for its money previously. And I will tell you, I think the district is getting value for its money now. Now, it's up to the board to decide, you know, is that the level that the board expects or whatever? But I will tell you, before, even though it was costing X, it wasn't good value for the money because there was just problem after problem after problem. It was super inefficient. And, you know, you don't see this on an invoice, but if I go down 45 minutes every day because my computer crashes at noon, or if the gates are offline for 45 minutes to an hour once a week, on a Wednesday in the middle of the day, or if the front office, the accounts payable clerk, the check run prints twice and then she has to go back in and void an entire check run because there was a computer glitch that nobody's equipped to fix, right? Like, there were so many inefficiencies and so much staff downtime from these IT issues early on in my time here that I'm seeing be resolved now, and I'm seeing not occurring anymore, and it's kind of like rising tide lifts all boats. And so I just want to make that point that beyond the dollars and cents, there's a value component, and I do think the district is getting value for having a full-time IT professional here that can address these issues.
And I appreciate that, Mark, on a couple of levels. One, I asked several months ago, basically, for a report from the IT manager in terms of the accomplishments, and we got a very generic, you know, report without really any detail. You've provided me more detail in the last 5 minutes than I've had in the last 7 months, so I appreciate. Does that position report to you or the GM under our organizational chart?
To the GM.
Okay. And I never quarreled. I don't think anybody on the board quarreled with acknowledging there was value to have in-house IT. And I hearken back to my last full-time employment at Sacramento Regional Transit. Now, agreeably, I was an assistant vice president for the corporation, and I got real good service. But our IT people, because we had them on site and staffed up, you know, we got really good response times and problems were fixed. So I don't think there's ever been any question about an inherent value of having an IT person. Again, there was some debate about whether we needed that person half-time or full-time. And again, there's a question of, are we seeing the dollar savings that were projected? And I think that that's a legitimate discussion point. Yeah, we may not be seeing the dollar savings, here's why, but here's the other benefits that we have. Then that all goes into a discussion with the board. We haven't been receiving that information, and I've been asking for it for 2 months. Again, I just got more information from you in 5 minutes than I have in the last 60 days, so I thank you for that. And I think it's good information for us to have. Director Merchant, anything else from you?
Yeah, just a couple of things. And I think first thing that struck me was that the existing or pre-hiring an internal IT guy, they couldn't support you remotely. That to me seems, not our own IT guy, but the people that they were hiring, that seems to be a real, I can't believe that. I mean,
that's kind of the industry standard these days, isn't it?
My daughter runs a tech department that supports 1,400 people and has a staff of 13 or 14. But the other thing they have that we don't possess here is they have engineers. I mean, you know, if they have a problem, and I think the one thing maybe that I didn't appreciate until we actually had this discussion was the fact that it is not, you know, a server and a couple of laptops. We have, you know, remote plant service, we have gate service, we have a lot more camera work, sophisticated stuff going on here than maybe meets the eye. I would be interested in just understanding as an overview just basically what we were paying for outside support and what we're actually paying now. And some of that stuff I'm sure is in common, you know, that but I wouldn't mind understanding going forward that and it is a justification that if you're in the grocery store somebody's gonna ask you and has, mm-hmm. Okay, because there was a big flurry over what we were spending for administrative staff, and now we're adding an IT guy, and blah 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 blah. It's just convenient to have that answer. And
okay,
I'm not at this point willing or prepared to say that we should make some change. I think we understanding what those numbers really are will be helpful, but I just think we just keep doing what we're doing.
Okay. Yep.
Okay.
Good. Yeah, and I think when the proposal was made to hire a full-time IT employee, a manager, the board was presented with a list of the primary vendor contracts and what those projected costs were on an annual basis. So, in theory, and we were presented with this kind of balancing act. And all I've asked for is show me what's happened since then. And it's been reported to be too onerous to prepare that information. I find that hard to believe, especially if we have an IT professional that ought to be able to extract that information or direct others to do so. Is there any public comment on this topic?
There is not, sir.
Okay, then let's move on to item 5. Barcode stickers, cost increase, and the use of resultant revenue. This thing's bounced around for a couple of months. We waived the first reading of an ordinance to adopt new barcode sticker fees, and the second reading is scheduled for the meeting next week. I have continued, and I think other members of the board have, and I think the general manager have, continued to receive email communications from community members expressing their objections to this proposal, and the nature of the objections vary. Some of them are just flat opposed to any increase in cost, which we anticipated would be the case. Some, and I think we had some discussion about this at the last board meeting, some folks have expressed concern over the fact that we still don't have our audits completed and a full accounting of, you know, what our security funding is, what our security expenditures are. I think there's some general misunderstanding about how much money Measure J generates. Some of the more recent, and Amelia, I sent you another, I don't know, maybe half dozen via email this morning that I saw in my email okay. this morning. There's also, Mark, some discussion about concern, and we do have this behind the gate, outside the gate, you know, activity out there. Psychology maybe is the best term. And some of the objection is having people inside the gate, who is the predominant percentage of people with barcodes, barcode stickers, paying for enhancing patrol outside the gates. And that's why I asked you to break down, and I appreciate you revisited, Communications Committee, we asked you to revisit the information that was shared. I did see the information that was included in the pipeline. I think that's helpful. I think it also generated probably some of the additional comments from members of the community. I had a few say, you know, I'm willing to consider, you know, reasonable increase, and I understand there may not be enough money, but so I don't know how this is gonna go Wednesday. I think I'm receiving some pressure, and it was noted at the last board meeting, I had committed via social media to seek to table the matter until we had more discussion and maybe put it into the budget discussions, even though I had supported the concept twice, and I still embrace the idea. I think it's a creative way for us to raise some additional revenues that are reasonable costs. One of the questions has been, have we documented what it costs us to administer the program, and are we asking for increases above that? And, you know, I don't know. But again, those might be appropriate discussions at budget time. And so I don't know what the will of the board will be next week. John, I don't know if you have a specific recommendation that you'd like to have us take forward from this committee.
A couple of things. Let me qualify it. I've done this a bunch of times over the last 30 years. I come from New York City, and my version of whether I am secure in my environment is probably different than some of the people that live here. And I use the analogy, when I got up in the morning in New York and I looked out the window, if my car was still there, then I was secure.
It's a good start.
I didn't know until I went downstairs whether the battery was still there. And I put that aside, because one of the things that surveys have proven is that this community cares a great deal about security. And when you and I talked yesterday about the property tax allocation and about the allocation of overhead and how we got trapped in the consultant study the last time that radically increased the allocation for security, it was actually a tipping point in how much of a contribution we wanted to continue to make from property tax allocations. A couple of things are going on simultaneously here. You told me, first of all, that there have been, with turnover and the new addition of homes and everything else, an increase in our property tax allocation from, you know, past trips when I've been on the board where we were at 680 and then 750, and now we're pretty much at $1 million. That if we consider that whole number, and we consider the changes in the structure of the department that you have illustrated, that we might be able to get a consensus on what the department should really look like going forward. And if we get that consensus, I think we are now incorporating some version of the barcodes, some streamlining of the management structure, the allocation of the overhead, all of those things give us a number that we can put against however many patrol people you want to put out there. We know what the gate takes to operate. I mean, that's what it is. But if we're going to, for example, and I'm making this number up, if we're going to put four out there, okay, it's going to cost us this. So between the overhead and those four and the gate operation, we now have a whole number. And as we enter the budget process, we ask the board to decide, is this what we really want to do? And I think what this time frame allows us to do is go back one more time, and this is not your problem, go back one more time to the community and say, this is what we have the ability to do, and in the new scheme of things, this is what it will cost us, and this is what we are going to attempt to budget in the next fiscal year. And Steve started to allude to what we talked about last night. There are like three or four classes of people here. I don't want to pay any more money, period. I got enough security. I don't want any security. It goes on and on. So we're never satisfying everybody. I mean, no matter what we do, somebody is not going to be happy. But at least in this way, we're demonstrating that we understand the cost and the service, and we're going to put it into a budget. So maybe we're saying, rather than implement this thing on January 8th, maybe we implement it on July 1st in a very concrete proposal. I'm not locked into that, and I would personally like some input from anywhere and everywhere as to whether this is a good idea. But I think, by the way, and I mentioned this last night, that what showed up in the pipeline this time was really good. I mean, they know what's coming, at least at this point. So you don't have any of that pushback now, or you shouldn't have that, you know, well, where did this come from? Another charge, another this. So that's what my thinking is. I haven't made a decision, and I got another week here for somebody to convince me to do something.
I have an additional consideration that I think we need to put into the record, and John, you and I have talked about this briefly. For some time, the RMA has been discussing the prospect of assuming responsibility for security, at least behind the gates where their boundaries lie. And I don't believe that our board ever received any kind of final recommendation from them or a report from Director Mabee, who was coordinating that interagency discussion. And I think if there is still a serious interest within the RMA leadership to assume responsibility for security, or at least a portion of security, that we probably ought not to implement any significant changes until we know, you know, whether or not that's going to go forward. It looks like the general managers and board presidents for Country Club, RMA, and CSD will be meeting the afternoon of January 22nd. I just got if you've seen the email from Mr. Dutton,
yes.
Amelia, that just came through. Mark, I'm going to ask you to attend that meeting with me.
Okay.
Scheduled for, it looks like, the 22nd of January, 3 o'clock to 5:30. I don't know that we have a location yet. I'd be happy to host the meeting here.
That's what I'll plan on.
Okay. And I think that we need to put the question to the RMA directly, look, are you still interested in, you know, if they are, then I think we need to sit down, staff, board president, and council of the respective agencies and discuss, you know, hey, is this going to happen or not? Because I think that's an important consideration. And again, I know that there's already this disconnect between those living on the north side of the highway and those living on the south side of the highway. But I think it's important for us to know whether they're serious about that. And then this board can decide whether or not we're willing to transfer that responsibility. I don't know that question has ever been officially, at least not in my brief tenure, has that item been presented to the board for consideration. So I think I'm inclined to recommend on Wednesday that we table this issue, at least pending the meeting on the 22nd with RMA, and maybe, John, as you just expressed, until we have, you know, a more defined course of action with regard to our security department. And that's kind of where I'm leaning. I don't know if you're prepared to support that as a recommendation from the committee, or we just play it out at the board.
I would support it, but I want it supported in a way that it's clear what I just tried to get through my head and say. And adding to that, I want to do it once. Whatever it is, I want to do it once. The other concern I have, Richard, I wanted to make sure you understood this. I had back in, I think it was back in 2016, when I started this run of meetings with John Sullivan, he was absolutely gung-ho to transform security into two entities, one south of the highway and one north of the highway. And what he talked about doing was essentially getting LAFCO authority on that side of the road. I didn't totally buy into it. I understood it because he kept making the point to me that security on your side of the road has a lot different requirements than security on our side of the road. And I'm not sure I buy that either, except that there is probably, in terms of time of day, a lot more going on at night where you are, between the RV yard and the storage center and the airport, and now the gas stations and the Bel Air and all that stuff, that maybe the need for security, the time of day for security, and what they actually do are different than, you know, catching teens that have stolen daddy's golf cart, you know, or whatever we're doing on the other side of the road. I would never support anything that left your side of the road hanging. The other thing, though, I do have a question that I was just curious about is in terms of the security fee, does the shopping center get one bill, or is the barber paying and the Bel Air paying and the Tractor Supply paying? I had six leases. And every one of my leases had common area maintenance. And as a part of that common area maintenance, I paid security on every one of them. And I'm not sure how they're structured. Is Bel Air paying security and also paying CSD security? I'm just curious how that works.
Every separate entity gets a monthly service bill that has water, sewer,
drainage and security
on it. Right. The commercial center does their solid waste a different way, but
okay,
they get a monthly service bill with those services.
Okay. So is there a way to, I mean, if you're going to have, one of the things that someone will ask you at some point in time, if this discussion about RMA is going to go on, is is how much security cost is there and how much security revenue is there across the street, south of the highway, where we are now. That would be an interesting number to know. I don't want to just spend half a day doing this, but if it's easily accessible data, it would be interesting to know, based on what the shopping center pays and what the folks in the village pay, how much money's over there, and what could we do with it. At some point, somebody's going to have to answer that question if there's going to be a discussion with RMA. So.
Amelia, could you scroll down a little further on there? I have the inverse of that because I was trying to pull this for the inside the gates look. One more page down.
Yes, sir.
So this is showing the revenue, and this is the revenue that's coming in versus expense for inside the gates. And this is a look at it with the barcodes and without the barcodes. And so you can see that without the barcodes, where we're at now, monthly billing inside the gates is $1.3 million. And then the operating expenses attributable to inside the gates is $1.6 million.
Right.
So with the barcode, so there's more expense than revenue coming in. So with the barcode fee increase that we're talking about here and adding whatever was in there before for barcodes, so including full barcodes, it's one point, I didn't add those two together, but a little over 1.4 million revenue coming in, and then the OPEX obviously is the same. 1.59, 1.6 million. So we're looking at a difference of 187,000 to the negative. So that's the analysis on that. I can believe that was something that was asked for during the communications committee meeting. So
okay.
So it would be just the inverse of that, but it would be going the other direction.
Yeah. The one piece that we don't have, Mark, and I it may be elusive. I know that we discussed this with Kelly Benitez when he was here, and that is the distribution of patrol time. It's understandable that the bulk of our expense is attributed to the north side of the highway because we staff the two gates 24/7, and the staffing, you know, obviously is the largest component of the operating cost. And so when we look at, you know, the patrol costs, and you're attributing, you know, it looks like 390,000 out of 450, give or take, you know, to inside the gates. You know, that may be very accurate description, but I think it's based probably on some assumptions and some estimates, and that's maybe the best we can do. But I do think that as we see additional growth potential on the south side, I think there's more businesses going in, expanded hours of operation. I don't know whether some of the vacant, you know, buildings on the old plaza are going to be occupied or not. But, you know, yeah, I think John's right. There's probably a different need for security. And, you know, in some parts of our county, that need for additional security in commercial establishments is met by the property owners themselves in the hiring of private security. I'm not advocating that necessarily, but I'm saying that is a model that's worth looking at, you know, in the context of overall discussion. And, you know, we have a history of being a somewhat homogeneous acting and sounding community, although that's changing, you know, over the years. But yeah, we'll make sure, John, that you have a chance to get on the record Wednesday with your concerns. And I think, Mark, we probably, again, this committee is going to recommend, I think, that we table this discussion, you know, pending some further review and questions being answered. Again, if a majority of the board votes for that, then
you know, we'll postpone implementing this program.
And I want to make it, from my own standpoint, really clear that that's what we're doing, is postponing.
Right.
Or delaying or refining. One of the other questions I have that came out of your analysis on the barcode revenue is, and I don't know how we would do this, but if we implemented a barcode program for the villages and for the gardens, where they pay,
and the villas,
you can go over there.
trying to help my stepdaughter out.
I've been there 25 years ago. I wonder, would that revenue be enough to justify putting gates at the entryway to the village and the entryway to the gardens? Here's where there was a lost opportunity when they built the hotel, and I spoke at length to the folks at the village at the time, that I thought they owed you a gate, they being the village, based on the fact that now you have runners and joggers and walkers and lookers in the hotel all the time. And now we have people, and I've been told, that wander through where that never used to be the case. We've had packages stolen off front doors at the gardens, and obviously both of those entities are a lot more exposed. We can't do what we do on the north and south, but I think there's some conversation that can be had about the impact that gates at those entrances could have. Number one, it stops the automobiles. If you don't have a barcode and you don't belong here, you're not going to wander through. And it's particularly over here in the gardens, you're not going to wander through and see what Amazon has left on the front porch. You know, that kind of thing. I would be curious, and it doesn't, if we are buying time with this project, then, you know, I would be interested in understanding if there was a way to justify that cost-wise, and whether the people that know more about security than I do could tell me whether it had any traction or it was something that would be worth doing. The shopping center is what it is, but we have residents in common that live in both of those locations, and if we could do something to improve that, I think it would enhance the, it might help gain more acceptance of the overall project if the folks that live in these two places thought it was worth it. Do you have filled out a form?
Okay. So would we have any public comment on this issue?
Actually, we do have public comment from Mr. Richard Gears.
A few things.
Timer.
Just a comment. I know that OE3 Training Center, I don't know if they still do, but in the past they've hired their own security.
Yes.
It was like that for years, and I can't confirm it anymore. As far as a gate at the village, my understanding is that will never happen. They will have to get unanimous consent of all the homeowners to change the CCNRs, and I don't think that will happen. It could be. Another note, when you refer to Murrieta Village, there's no S on the end. When you're referring to villages with an S on the end, that's Village A, B, C, D, and E. That's John Sullivan's village.
Just, okay.
I hear that frequently.
And the villas have an S on the end.
Yes. I hear the same thing year after year when it comes to security. That I think is a misconception. It's like there's two buckets for security, and indeed there are two buckets, but it's not that the way it's presented. There's the bucket for behind the gate and the bucket outside the gate, and the perception is behind the gate, they can do whatever they want with that bucket. And that's not right. There are indeed two buckets. One bucket for the gate, a separate bucket for patrol services. Outside the gate, we pay for patrol services. Inside the gate, you pay for the gate, and you pay for patrol services. There is no accounting for that. And I think that's a major fault in the accounting system for security. And part of that is because all five members of the board are RMA members, and they don't care. I mean, I won't say they don't care, but it's not an issue for them. But what I see happening is this bucket for the gate. Hey, RMA and the members can do whatever they want with that. The other bucket, which everybody pays into, is for patrol services for the district. Not patrol services behind the gate and patrol services outside the gate. It's one bucket for the district. And what I've seen happening is this bucket for patrol services is being robbed to subsidize the gate. This public money is being taken to subsidize this private gate. And I question whether that's even legal. And now I've complained about our money being used to support the gate. And what I hear is laughable. That, hey, we don't even pay that. But you know, that money that's coming out of patrol services, some of that is ours. And some of that is being used to support the gate. It may be laughable that we're not paying much, but some of our money is going to pay the gate. In a way, I can't prove that because the accounting system doesn't account for the revenue that way. It's just one big bucket. And I see that as a very big shortcoming. But what I'm hearing is this barcode fee, which would be going to support the gate. Oh, now you don't need to rob from patrol services anymore. And that kind of supports the idea that you've been robbing this, what I call public money, to support a private gate. So, if I was on the board, I'd insist that accounting be accounting for security. Security, I mean, gate versus patrol services, and that's not being done. So anyways, that's my comments.
Thank you.
Any other public comment?
No, sir.
Anything further from staff or Director Merchant?
No, I'm good.
All right, then.
So then shall I add into the record that the committee recommends tabling this item at?
Yes.
Thank you, sir.
Please.
I should have taken a quick bathroom break.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Go ahead, Mark.
Time.
I'm going to take a brief recess.
Pause this.
Okay, we're back on the record. The next item on the agenda is funding temporary employees to assist with completion of outstanding audits. Director Merchant, you are the champion of this issue. You want to kick it off? I know there's a report in the packet from Mr. Matulich.
Yes. I am the proponent and willing to take the flack that will come along with it. I asked Mark reasonably at the last board meeting to estimate for me what would improve our performance to a point that we could accelerate the completion of the audits. And I did that for a number of reasons. The primary reason being that we are in discussions right now that are discussions about tens of millions of dollars. Some of that is attributable to The reserve study that we just completed that gives us in 10-year increments, or 5-year increments, $10 million in each, some of which is attributable to digging giant holes in the middle of Bass Lake, or running water down the Jackson Highway to support development, or enhancing recycled water supply, enhancing lake storage, succeeding in getting changes to our permits. And, you know, I'm not the financial wizard on the block, but I understand that you are not going to divide that up among 3,000 residential connections and have each of us pay our share. We are going to have to go out and obtain some long-term funding to accomplish this, maybe luckily sustained by some grants. But we're talking about improving 50-year-old infrastructure, particularly in Unit 1 and Unit 2 in sewers. We can't begin to talk to that bond market until we have a set of completed audits. And in addition to that, my concerns go beyond that to understanding well in advance, okay, based on what those audits tell the bond market, based on the fact that the district has had a price increase defeated, based on the fact that the district has had a bond issue defeated, based on the fact that we went through about a year and a half or 2 year period where we had the bond market knocking on our door because our developer was not paying his property taxes. All of those things will help tell us how we stand up in the competition for bond money with all the other CSDs on the planet who don't have these problems. And I also think that we are at a point where the district really does not have a chance of regaining any of its credibility until we can produce those audits. So it is going to cost money to do that, and I think it's a good idea. There are going to be people who don't think it's a good idea, but I don't care. I am going to support hiring two people to enhance the production and get those audits finished. When the audits are done, we will send those people home. We will get people that do not require PERS contributions. We will get Robert Half rent attempts, or whatever you want to call them, with the accounting experience that we need. And Mark has explained to me where he is in the process, where these are people who can sit down and take an Excel spreadsheet and begin to do the grunt work up front that's necessary for him to complete the project. And I am 100% behind that. So I don't know what else to say.
I readily and heartily endorse this recommendation. And it's kind of interesting, when it was raised at the board meeting the other night, I thought, why hasn't this come up previously? You know, I know that there was some discussion recently about employment of two temporary account technicians that I understand are really doing regular routine work for the district that were hired, although not specifically authorized in the budget or in the position register for the district. I'm thinking, why didn't somebody, one of us previously, think, let's hire some folks to help Mark? we've been disappointed when you haven't been able to meet some previously, you know, projected time frames, and I just really appreciate Director Murchie you coming up with this concept, and especially because I know that there are a lot of demands on Mr. Matulich's time for a variety of reasons, and I think that's probably going to increase a little bit in the near term. So I think this is a recommendation, Amelia, we can put on the board, and that the Finance Committee is recommending the projected estimate is $170,000 for two temporary accountants from February 1 to June 30. I don't know if you're going to need that entire period, but I think it's wise to go wider instead of narrower. I will gladly vote to approve this on next Wednesday's meeting.
And the beauty of that situation is that if you find halfway down the road that you're making more progress than you anticipated, you can reduce from 2 to 1.
Oh, yes, for sure.
It's not like we have hired a long-term employee and we have PERS and we have everything else going on. We just need, and it also gives you the option through these companies to be very specific on who you are looking for, and they are going to provide you, if they're any good, the kind of people you need to come in here and sit down at a temporary desk and start to work. So, yes, sir.
Yeah. Can I comment without going
out of turn? Yeah, would you just come to the microphone, please, Mr. Farrell?
This one time.
Okay, sorry. I think you guys are doing absolutely the right thing. I would just kind of think about how you word this, because the community has been kind of pretty critical about the fact that these audits haven't been done. You've committed to a certain time frame. At the last meeting, when people were beating you up all about this, you're saying, oh, yeah, well, I was late on getting this first one done, but I'm going to still get them all done by, I think you said, May. If I remember properly.
March or April, I think, is the time frame we were given last.
Yeah, well, whatever that was, I would encourage you to think about the proposal being funding it through his commitment to give you what he said he was going to give it, with the provision that if no more time is needed, that it would be approved by the board on some sort of, you don't have to bring it back to a whole vote or anything like that, but maybe the Finance Committee would approve any extensions as necessary. Just something like that. But I think this audit issue, I remember the last time I was up here saying, well, don't make the audit the big deal. But I am saying it is a big deal. It really does need to get done. So I think this is the solution to it. Get it over with. That's that.
Can I make a comment?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, so I totally understand. And I think I've said this before. Let me say it again. As much as everybody wants these audits done and to move on, I don't know that anybody wants it more than me. So I do want to get rid
of the albatross, do you, sir?
Yeah, exactly. I do want to run through this. So the audits are a big deal. They are a big deal for lots of reasons, and one big reason Mr. Merchant mentioned, which is to go out, if you want to secure financing, you have to have that done. But what is a bigger deal than the audits, and what is absolutely necessary to get the audits done, is the accounting has to be right, and it has to be complete. And that is something that I don't think anybody here realized the state that accounting was in. So, when I started here on October 31st, 23, I was under the impression that, hey, the accounting, we have some accountants here, we're working through, and we just need to go clean up these prior audits. Well, that's easy. As somebody with my accounting experience, you come in, you run the general ledger detail, you figure out what's been posted where and what needs to be cleaned up, and then you clean it up. That is not the case here. There are 5 enterprise funds here in a general fund. Every fund is supposed to be in balance. You have an accounting software package here that does not do fund accounting. Not one single fund was in balance. So it's like 6 separate business entities with their accounting, debits and credits, not in balance. So the accounting, and then there are a number of transactions that aren't even posted because all your periphery systems don't talk to the general ledger. So it has been a months-long process of realization of just what kind of state that we're in here. So I understand that there have been deadlines put out there that have seemed to be missed and moving deadlines, but that's not because people aren't working. It's because it's been a realization of what exactly the state is. And then in July, as I mentioned before, we made the decision, we're just going to start over and we're just going to repost it. Because when we finished the 2021 audit and we rolled into the 21-22 audit, which we started in May a little bit, but really got cranking on it in July, was none of the funds are in balance. This infamous audit clearing account, which took, you know, the prior regime and another outside consultant 18 months, and they couldn't unwind this clearing account, which was basically a dumping ground for one-sided journal entries, that had a humongous balance in it again. So it has been rebuilding this thing over, and I really think it's important for the community and the confidence the community has in CSD and current staff. We're doing this the right way, and doing it the right way is going to build a solid foundation. The initial idea, at least that I understood when I started here and in my tenure here, is, and I think Director Mabee mentioned it at a prior board meeting, was the idea was get this handled in-house, because a significant amount of money, I think around $250,000, was spent on consultants in the past, and it didn't work, right? They couldn't get their year done that they were working on. And so we got that done in 3 or 4 months after I started. And the thought was, let's save money. Let's not spend that again. Well, you can see what it costs, right? It's going to be maybe $170,000. Now, I do want to say, first of all, thank you. And it's a great idea. It's a fantastic idea to do it, because it just needs to get done. And this is really the only way to get it done, because there are two people here doing accounting, me and our accountant, Chris. And these are full-time jobs. And anybody, you know, we have full-time jobs here, right? And anyone that's in accounting, or if you have friends that are in accounting, talk to them and ask them, oh, what's it like during when you're having your annual audit? And they will tell you, oh, yeah, that's like the busy time of year. That's when I'm working on the weekend or I'm staying late. And imagine now, ask them, what would it be like to do your regular full-time job and 4 prior years of accounting from scratch, right? And so that's what we've got going on here. And I think it's great to bring these two folks in. And let me tell you why it's going to be successful now versus before. Before, I mean, I don't really know what happened when they were brought in before, but I know the state of the books when I started, and it was in complete disarray, okay? What you have now, because we've taken the time to do it right, is now you've got a process. Now you've got institutional knowledge here on what is even in the books, what these payments are that are coming in, what these expenditures are that are going out, what each one of these buckets of restricted funds are. I mean, I think not until we did the budget last year, I think it was completely forgotten here about the security impact fee. It wasn't being collected. We realized it, and we had to go out and get it collected for past due uncollected amounts. So I understand, and it's easy to look at the audits and say, oh, they're so far behind. Current staff didn't create this problem. And it has been a months-long realization of just how bad it is and just the complete scope of what it is. And then it's, we're just going to start over. And so there is a process in place that we'll be able to plug these two people into. The plan is to have, we did 2021 and 21-22 in-house. That was a monumental task for two people, okay? And so, and I guess if the metric is $170,000 for 2 years, we save the district $170,000, right? By like killing ourselves, right? And so, and then we, you know, set up this process that we're going to be able to successfully plug these outside temps into. So It's an easy target. I get it. But I really want to make it clear we're not the problem, we're the solution. And we're going to be able to plug these folks in. I'm going to put one of them on 22-23, I'm going to put one of them on 23-24, and they're going to work those years concurrently. And then we're going to have to schedule the auditors to come in and hopefully audit them concurrently. And the reason that I have in here to stay through the end of June is, number one, I just want the scope to get the job done, okay? And then, and I don't want to keep moving the goalpost, right, okay? And then number two, I want them to also be here to work through the audit, because an audit is, which we're dealing with it now, is very labor intensive, because they do their substantive testing, which is part of the audit process, and you've got to go and dig through records and pull out data and support numbers, and there's all kinds of asks and whatever, and I want these people to work all the way through that whole entire process. And then we will hit the ground running with 24-25, because that is currently being done accurately. So for the first time in, I don't know, maybe 5 years. So that's kind of the state of accounting, and I really appreciate your words. I agree, but I do want to make sure that the community has confidence and really understands current staff is fixing a problem that's been ongoing for maybe 5 years here. And it is a major process. One of the other delays in this too is when I started here, there really wasn't a lot of accounting happening. And I think that it would have been wildly irresponsible to just say, you know what, I'm going to work on the audits and just let whatever happens, happens every single day when I walk in and out of this door. I just, in good conscience, I could not do that. That would have been wildly irresponsible to do, to just let everything continue on. Nothing, you know, not nothing, but most of the stuff not being booked. Literally, the checkbook was the only thing that was going in the accounting records. Not the monthly service bills, that was not going in the accounting records. And there's all kinds of problems with the billing system. It was horribly inefficient. There were way too many codes in there that were redundant and unnecessary. There were, I would say, staff's time was mostly spent fielding customer complaints. And you just can't come in here and see that as a responsible finance director and just look the other way and say, well, I'm going to work on 21-22, when 24-25 or 23-24 is like imploding every day you walk in the door. So getting that fixed was also a major undertaking, and now we're in good shape with that. And so I'll get off my soapbox about it, but I mean, that's, I just really think that's important for the community to know and understand. And I encourage anyone, go talk to a friend of yours or a family member that's an accountant and ask them, hey, what's it like when your company is undergoing an audit, your annual audit? Hey, what would you think if you were working somewhere where pretty much no accounting was happening and it wasn't happening for the last 5 years and you had to repost everything for four entire years of accounting, and oh, by the way, there's nobody left with institutional knowledge of anything that's going on, really, right? And you've got to learn it all from scratch. So I would just encourage folks, if you have a friend or family member that's an accountant, run that scenario by them. Don't take my word for it, and see what kind of response you get back.
Can I just
Mark, I've heard this before. I believe everything you're saying. I don't have any issues with that. You know, I in some ways feel I defended you at a meeting over this issue. Now, what I'm saying is that, okay, it was March. At the meeting when the things were hitting the fan here last night, it was, oh, we're going to get them done. We're still going to get them done by May. And now I'm here in June. So that's all I'm saying. Just be aware. You're saying you don't want to keep moving the goalpost. But that is, in fact, what you're doing. So, and all I'm just saying is that if you say it's going to, if it is going to be June, man, my advice to you is don't miss it. Don't miss it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Mark. I just want to say, Mark, that I think the best and single most important action that this district has taken in the 2 years that I've been serving on this board is hiring you. Your bona fides are solid, your experience is absolute, and again, I appreciate your ability and willingness to provide us with detailed information and explanations about what's going on. And I wish maybe 4 months ago it would have been premature to have this issue before us, but maybe not. And I wish that we had at least given it some consideration previously. And I'm happy to make this recommendation with Director Merchant to the board next week. Again, thank you for the work that you're doing, and we want to give you some additional tools to help you be successful and you know to meet those time frames that you've set. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Anything else on this item?
Nope.
All right, then the next item is the proposed calendar for budget preparation. We have a document in the package. Mark, is there anything that you want to address or speak to? The calendar looks appropriate to me. We'll have to talk about making some adjustments on team lead, but other than that, the time frames look appropriate to me.
Yeah, I don't have any questions.
Okay, the only thing I would say is just the Finance Committee review of the draft 25-26 budget. It's a little bit out of order chronologically. It's April 10th, and I just wanted to point that out. It would be down the list a little further, but all the dates are the way that they would be and the descriptions and everything, so I don't have anything else to add.
Okay.
All right. And I think we I would just recommend that this be presented with maybe just leave the team lead information off at this point. But I think this should be presented to the board just as an information item next Wednesday.
Will do.
Any public comment on this item?
No, sir.
I think that was the last item on our agenda. Any additional comments from the public on any subject
for
this committee?
Nope.
Director Merchant, anything you'd like to add?
No, I'm done.
All right, as am I, then without objection, we will adjourn the meeting. It is 11:42 a.m. Thank you.
Thank you.